Proverbs chapter 1. So this morning, and probably for a few weeks, probably into the summer and possibly into the beginning of the autumn as well, we're going to be looking at wisdom literature. That is Job, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Songs. Why? Number one, desire. We want everything that God has for us. We want to see what he's saying, even the tricky bits, even the bits we may not fully understand. That's number one. Number two, alongside desire, is diet. Okay, diet. Yeah? We need proteins. Yeah, we have protein. We have carbs day after day. At some point, you need some greens. Okay? We need to have a more of a balanced diet. And a balanced diet is seeing all that God has for us in the various parts of literature. So wisdom literature, is something that's often neglected. So in the Old Testament, there is at least 93 chapters. 93 chapters on wisdom. Yet, in my 35 years as a believer, how many sermons have I heard on Proverbs on a Sunday morning? 1, 2. Yeah? We're in danger of spiritual malnutrition. We need everything that God has for us. So desire, diet, number three, relevance. Especially for the young. Yeah? So for many young people and children, church on a Sunday, but the Bible has nothing to say for the rest of life, for the rest of the week. Yeah, so I do my little churchy thing and then I just get on with life. And the assumption is that the Bible has nothing to say about life and the world, and the wisdom literature says, oh yes, it does. Oh yes, it does. Suffering, absent fathers, sexuality, inner emptiness that can leave people feeling almost suicidal, it is all covered in the wisdom literature. Yeah? So even if we don't understand everything, and I'm not the world's expert on wisdom literature, what I am is probably an enthusiast for wisdom literature, which is not the same thing. But because we can't understand everything, we can still get something. Okay? And as we know, something is always better than nothing. Yeah, well said there. Well said. Yeah, so as I said, the books are Job, Ecclesiastes, Song of Songs, and here Proverbs. So let's get straight into it. Proverbs 1, verse 1. We're told these are the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. So what is a proverb? Well, mainly it's small sayings, concise sayings, okay? Not lectures, small sayings. And in verse 6, it's expanded. If you look there, this is going to be made up of proverbs, of parables, of sayings, of riddles. And it's a collection that's been put together. Who wrote it? Verse 1. It comes from the Davidic kingdom. It comes from Solomon, who's a son of David. What is Solomon known for? Three things, usually. You can sum them up. Wealth, women, wisdom. Okay? Wealth, women, wisdom. And they're all going to play a part, actually, in the books that we see. How old is the book? Probably about 900 to 750 BC. So we're talking almost 3,000 years old. As you're going to see, highly relevant, especially because of the God who we're dealing with. Why read it? Why read wisdom? Verse 2. For attaining wisdom and discipline, for understanding words of insight, for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life, and doing what is right and just and fair. So, wisdom, living well, living rightly in God's world. The practical side of life. And we're told, if you study and apply what is said here, if you think about it, meditate on it, you will have insight and you will make the right decision in all decisions in life. Who is it for? Verse 4. For giving prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. Let the wise listen and add to their learning. Let the discerning get guidance. So this is good news. It's good news if you're simple, okay, or naive, or a bit inexperienced in life, not used to a culture, perhaps young in age. It's good news for you. You can have knowledge. Yeah? You can be shrewd. You can be as shrewd as someone in their 60s, 70s, 80s. It's good news if you need guidance. Yeah, but God will give guidance as we meditate on the scriptures and the Proverbs. He can give you the wisdom to deal with people. Yeah, and it's good news for the wise. That is, if you're a wise person, you say, look, I've got all the wisdom I need. Okay, I'm up to my eyeballs in wisdom. I've had enough of these Proverbs for 50, 60 years. I'm full up. I can't take no more. That's not a wise attitude. What he says is, there's never going to be an end to your need for wisdom. It's part of the very creation of the world. And it's good news all round. So let me break down the way it sort of plays out. 31 chapters, which some people will divide, actually. Some Christians divide. And so every day they'll do a chapter and then spin it around and go back to chapter 1. You can actually do it for a whole month. Some people will even break the chapters up. So on day 1, they'll do verses 1 to 8. Day 2, they'll do chapter 2, 1 to 8. And they'll break it down that way. So that's how some people use it. First 9 chapters, long introduction. Long introduction. Very long introduction. Perhaps the longest introduction in any book in the Bible. 9 chapters. That's 1/3 of the book. Just on an introduction. Then chapter 10, forward after that, you have what we know as Proverbs. The very short sayings. Chapter 25, you can have a look at that. Chapter 25, once you go through all these Proverbs. Chapter 25 and verse 1. 25 verse 1 says, there are more Proverbs of Solomon. Okay, copied by the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah. So this was compiled after Solomon died, but were part of his collection. And that gives us the dating of the book. And one thing to notice is, some people have said, we've looked in the ancient world, we've looked at the Proverbs of the ancient world, and Solomon has some of their Proverbs in his collection. He's nicked them. What's he doing with their Proverbs? Well, there's two things to note. Number one is Solomon had an international influence. He was probably one of the most international of the kings, and he had power and influence. Israel was never so powerful, never so internationally influential as under Solomon. And so he would have mixed with people, would have had a knowledge of their own literature, and some of those he would have brought into it. It would have been a result of his interaction. That's number one. Number two, why are some foreign proverbs here? Common grace, which we've looked at as a church, haven't we? A number of times. Common grace. God's ability to use those outside the kingdom in positive ways. In positive ways. That's why you can be taught by an unbelieving teacher. That's why you could receive medical treatment from a doctor who's not born again. Yeah. So when you went to have a problem, when you got a problem with your foot, you never asked the doctor, hey, do you believe John 3:16? No, you never asked him that. Why not? Because you know, common grace. God can give an ability to someone who's not a believer. That doesn't mean he's going to save him, but he does have that ability. Okay, so, and that's the case with this. He's able to take wisdom from all over the world, yeah? So every good and perfect gift is from above. James chapter 1. Every good and perfect gift is from above. So, chapter 1 to 9, intro. 10 to 24, Solomon. 25, more Solomon. And then chapter 30, you end with two men. One called Agar and one called Lemuel. And they will close out the book with their own thoughts. Okay, it's not clear whether they're actually Jews or actually Gentiles. One thing to remember about Proverbs, and we're going to see it again perhaps next week, God willing, is Proverbs are not promises. Proverbs are not promises. It's not saying, I will guarantee this will happen on every single occasion. What it is saying is, this is what I've observed will happen most of the time. Yeah, this is what will happen on most occasions. So let's get into this. Chapter 1, verse 7. This is the key verse in Proverbs. And probably one of the key verses in all the wisdom literature, especially Job, Ecclesiastes, Psalms probably as well. Chapter 1, verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. Let me repeat that. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. The foundation of Proverbs and the wisdom literature is spiritual. It's about your relationship with the covenant God. It's about your relationship with Yahweh, with Jehovah. It's about fearing him. Not terrorized by him, but reverencing him, honoring him, devotion, awe. And he says that is the fear that will get you to the starting blocks of wisdom. Without it, you're not really starting. Okay? So you can have a whole glorious book about wisdom. You can assemble wisdom from around the world. I could go around this room and, because there's about, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 different nations represented, I could get one or two sayings, write it down and publish it, and we would all make some money. But we're unwise. Why? Because we haven't feared the Lord. We're not fearing the Lord. The problem is the fool, and that's going to come up again and again, the fool. The fool is not someone who is like mentally stupid. She's as thick as two planks. That's not the kind of fool we're talking about. It's not an intellectual thing. It's a moral thing. Yeah, morally you are ignorant, but you're acting in that ignorance. You're acting without that wisdom. So when it comes to wisdom, the fool can say, I either take it or leave it, or wisdom is a waste of time. Yeah? And so it's a fight to get the wisdom. Just as in the Christian life, there's a fight for joy going on, there's a fight for peace going on, there's a fight for purpose going on, there's also a fight for wisdom as well. Everything is a fight. It will be until the day we die. There will be some sort of struggle, that there will be people who will be saying, as an example, a bad example, don't bother that rubbish. You don't need all that stuff. Just do life. So the opening question really is, do you fear God? Do you really fear God? Do you fear God enough to obey him? You see, we, in the 21st century, 3,000 years after the Proverbs, we have more reason to fear God than these people did, than Solomon did. Because then you had a part of God's salvation to rescue humanity. Then you had the promises. But what do we have? Living in the year of the Lord. Living with the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ. Seeing how his life played out. Hearing and reading and meditating on his death on the cross. Hearing the accounts of the resurrection. Hearing about it. We've got more. You've got more. More reason to fear him in a good and positive way. Do you fear God? Do you fear God enough to turn from rebellion and trust in Christ's death? Do you fear him? The right, the good, and the wise thing to do is to live and fear him. Yeah, it's to live and fear him, and fear him alone. Because one of the good things and great things about fearing God is you fear people less. It's one of the marvelous things, isn't it? Great thing. Because it means I'm not a slave to what others think about me. I'm freed as long as I fear God. Let's go back to this introduction, chapter 1 to 9. Chapter 1 to 9, you've got two big voices. You've got wisdom itself, speaking, and you've also got the Father. So, chapter 1, verse 8. Listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. They will be a garland to grace your head and a chain to adorn your neck. Don't forsake it. It's something beautiful. The father is Solomon. The son is the future king. The role of the earthly father is to teach his son or daughter wisdom. Did you know that? The role of the earthly father is to teach the son and daughter wisdom. And the wisdom will protect them in a hard world. That's a part of your job as a parent, to teach your children wisdom. And where there's no father, there's no wisdom. Wisdom will be something that won't happen. Youngsters will be unprotected in a tough world. Now, our culture, many fathers are absent. Our society, even this area, some are absent physically, some are absent emotionally, some are absent spiritually. And there's a whole load of reasons. Some of them beyond father's control, but others not. Depends on the individual. London, high numbers of children. But with Proverbs, there's good news for youngsters, isn't there? There's good news, isn't there? There's good news for youngsters because God says, I'm going to be your father. I can be your father. And so therefore, a mum or a grandmother or grandfather can give out the Proverbs themselves and they'll get the knowledge they need. You can step in and take that place. And in fact, it's one of the great things that any parent or grandparent or aunt or uncle could do, to share the Proverbs with young people and with children. It's going to help them. It's going to protect them, we're told. They're not going to miss out. Now, two areas the father warns them against. Here's the two areas. Sex and gangs. Okay? Sex and gangs. Have I got your attention? Great life issues, aren't they? Sex and gangs. Let's start with the gangs. Verse 10. My son, if sinners entice you, do not give in to them. If they say, come along with us, man, let's lie in wait for someone's blood. Let's waylay some harmless soul. Let's swallow them alive like the grave and whole like those who go down to the pit. We'll get all sorts of valuable things and fill our houses with plunder, man. Throw in your lot with us and we will share a common purse. Okay, we'll share, man, what we've got. We're not going to keep it to ourselves. You're not going to be an underling. We're just going to share it out. You have half, I have half. You think that gang culture is a 20th or 21st century phenomenon, you need to think again. You need to read the Proverbs. The ancient world, it was an issue even then. It's always been an issue. Groups of young people, and especially young guys, come together for easy money. Easy money. And Solomon's advice is, run for it. Run for it. Verse 15. My son, don't go along with them. Don't set foot on their paths. For their feet rush into sin. They are swift to shed blood. How useless to spread a net in full view of all the birds. Okay? That's daft. These men lie in wait for their own blood. They waylay only themselves. Such is the end of all who go after ill-gotten gain. It takes away the lives of those who get it. If you came up to me after this service and said, Andrew, I need some weed. Where can I go? Okay? If you just come to me and say, Andrew, I need some cannabis. Can you get some for me? Okay, my first question is, why do you need it? Because Jesus is enough. He's your peace. You don't need to smoke. I'll save you some money and your health. But if you were to say to me, Andrew, where can I get some weed? I could get some within 15 minutes. And I'm a slow walker, as my family will tell you. I could get you some weed in 15 minutes. I could tell you where they stand. I could tell you where to go. I've got 3 different places in the area where I live. We could get it. 15 minutes. Now here's the problem. If the pastor knows where they are, who else knows where you are? Yeah? If I know where they are, who else knows where they are? Their competitors know where they are. Their jealous other gang members know where they are. The person who they owe money to knows where they are. Any unhappy people know who they are. And the police know who they are. I guarantee you the police know who they are. Because you can see the camera up there where they're dealing down the bottom as you're walking past. Everybody knows where they are. What are they doing? Solomon would say, they're spreading a net in front of the birds. Do you see how relevant the scriptures are? Solomon saw it 3,000 years ago. What's going to happen on the streets of Northwest London? Now do you see how relevant the scriptures are? And what does he say? Well, look, how many criminals retire in one piece? We probably all know or know someone who knows someone who knows someone in the criminal fraternity. Okay? Historically, we probably all know one or two dodgy guys and women. How many of them retire in one piece? With their family intact, physically well, not ever having a beating, no lengthy prison sentence, have most of their wealth with them. How many? Next to none. Next to none. Proverbs says, the easy money is anything but. It's anything but easy. And so his advice to his sons and to all people coming through is, avoid it and steer clear. Steer clear. So that's gangs. And he'll speak about 10 times. But the issue he speaks about the most is actually sexual immorality. Okay? And I could have gone to a whole number of places in chapters 1 to 9. But we'll do chapter 6. Chapter 6, verse 23. Yeah. And one thing to remember is that there is plain speaking with Solomon with regards to sexual behavior. He is a bit more open and frank than we as churches would be. Yeah, but we mustn't be more, squeamish than the Bible. So what does he say in 6:23? He says, the commands, verse 23, are a lamp. This teaching is a light, and the correction of discipline are the way to life, keeping you from the immoral woman or the immoral man, from the smooth tongue of a wayward wife or wayward husband. Do not lust in your heart after his or her beauty, or let him or her captivate you with their eyes, for the prostitute reduces you to a loaf of bread. Okay, you're just a commodity, just a body. And the adulteress preys on your very life. Can a man scoop fire into his lap without his clothes being burned? Can a man walk on hot coals without his feet being scorched? So is he who sleeps with another man's wife, no one who touches her will go unpunished. Okay, this tells us a number of things. It tells us a little bit about seduction. You know, the sexual predator, the sexual player, what's the tools of their trade? Number one, their words. Number two, their eyes. Yeah, their words. They are as smooth as silk. Yeah, every player who comes. So if a naive need to know that. If someone's going to come and wants to use me, just my body, they usually come with their words. And then number two, their eyes. They can pierce you with their eyes. It's flattery, almost to hypnotize you, draw you in. And Solomon says, look out, look out. Also says, you know, very frankly, it is easy to develop a crush on an older person as a younger person. You can develop feelings for someone who's older. And for some younger married guys, a married woman is a fantasy. It's a fantasy figure for them. And Solomon again says, you are playing with fire. Verse 30, men do not despise a thief if he steals to satisfy his hunger when he is starving. Yet if he is caught, he must pay sevenfold. Though it costs him all the wealth in his house. But a man who commits adultery lacks judgment. Whoever does so destroys himself. Blows and disgrace are his lot, and his shame will never be wiped away. For jealousy arouses a husband or wife's fury, and she will show no mercy when he or she takes revenge. He will not accept any compensation. He will refuse the bribe, however great it is. Most affairs, illicit relationships, are exposed at some point. At some point, they come to light. Often, God brings them to light. And if it does, often, big, big trouble. All kinds of behavior. A person will completely, utterly lose their mind. Yeah, I can think of one lady, quite an attractive actress. Her husband's left her for a younger model. And she is on social media furious. And to the extent people who sympathize with her at the start say, listen, calm down, love. No, I will not calm down. And she just goes on and on and on and on. Deeply unattractive, but you can understand it. Do you know who understands it? The courts, often, in history. They will have something called crimes of passion. And they say, look, if somebody does something to somebody as a result of some form of adultery, we're not going to come down too hard on them. We might give them a little sentence, we might tell them to behave themselves, but we're not going to come down too heavy. You see, what can happen to you if you're found cheating? I'll tell you what, in Northwest London, these guys will give you a good beating. They will give you a good thrashing. And I guarantee you, whatever, if I were to come to people and ask you from your country what would happen to someone who's caught in adultery, they'll tell you something similar. It's universal. Yeah? A rage can come on someone who is cheated on that it's like a fire that will not go out, even after they've given you a good pasting and ripped up your clothes and given you a kicking, kicked your butt down the road. Serious. Solomon says, listen, stay clear. Stick with the wife of your youth. Don't get involved in this whole thing, this whole business. And if you're in that business, seek help. Get out. Get out. It's dangerous. See, I told you it was relevant, didn't I? So that's the voice of the father that we're going to see. Also going to look briefly at the voice of wisdom. And wisdom here is a woman. Wisdom's a lady. And she's going to speak, and she speaks about four times. I'm going to look at one of the things she says. Chapter 9, verse 1. This is this. Wisdom has built her house. She has hewn out its seven pillars. She's prepared her meat and she's mixed her wine. She's also sent out her table. She has sent out her maids and she calls from the highest point of the city. Okay, so she's ready. She's got her foundation. She built the house, she's got food, everything. She's waiting for people to come. She says, let all the simple come in here. She says to those who lack judgment, come, eat my food and drink the wine I have mixed. Leave your simple ways, abandon them, and you will live and walk in the way of understanding. Come on, come on, come on, everyone come in. I've got good things for you if you want wisdom. Verse 10. Again, we're told, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. So you come into the house of wisdom. What's the first thing you're going to do? You're going to put on the fear of the Lord. And then you're ready to go in and eat with her. But what are we told in verse 13? The woman's folly is loud. Okay?
Yeah.
She's loud as well. She's undisciplined without knowledge. She sits at the door of her house. Okay, so she's counteracting wisdom on a seat at the highest point of the city. She's standing right next to her. And so now you've got two voices. You've got loads of voices. And that's the problem. That's the problem with wisdom. We're trying to do wisdom, but there are lots of voices everywhere. And so how am I going to hear? Man, I'm going to need to ask God's help. Only way I'm going to hear. I'm never going to hear this wisdom. I need God's help. You need God's help. So understand Proverbs. It's not going to be taking place in a classroom where the teacher says, okay, you must all believe this. And here I am. I'm telling you some truth. Okay, children. Okay. It's not that. It's a marketplace. It's a marketplace with different voices shouting at one another. It's Speaker's Corner. That's what it is. Where everywhere will be opposition and you'll be wondering, which way do I go? Do I think? Your head will be spinning. We need God's help. So that's the introduction. And we're going to have, God willing, 3 more weeks of this. Big question is, did it work? Okay, you got Solomon, he's assembled all this wisdom. He's collecting this for his sons so they will be wise kings and they'll do the right thing. Did it work? Did the sons of Solomon absorb his wisdom? And the answer, as many of you know, mostly not. They didn't do it. 1 Kings chapter 11, you have one of the most unwise decisions ever made by a king, Rehoboam, son of Solomon, who basically he needs to keep the 10 kingdoms on side, but by his harsh words, he loses over half of the kingdom and the kingdom splits in two, all because of his lack of wisdom. And that continues, doesn't it, through the kings. Some kings are good, you know, your Josiah, your Hezekiah, but many are not. To be fair to the kings who follow, Solomon, no good example, is he? No good example with his wives and with his idolatry. He's able to compile the wisdom, but he doesn't consistently follow the Lord or fear him. Yeah? And so what we might as well say, if that's the case, if the bloke who wrote it can't live it, I might as well just take the book and throw it in the bin. Not quite. Because in the New Testament, the one who follows the fear of the Lord emerges, the Lord Jesus. Yeah? Who is he? He's a son of Solomon, a son of David and a son of Solomon. How is he described? Luke chapter 1 and 2, as a child, describes him as someone who had wisdom. How does he describe him as a youth? As one who had wisdom. How does he describe himself? We read it earlier, Matthew chapter 12. He said, I'm greater than Solomon. Why is he greater than Solomon? Because he's able to consistently apply God's wisdom. And he's able to supply forgiveness to those who have not followed God's wisdom. And he's able to provide future strength for you to do God's wisdom as you follow him. One last passage, Colossians. Colossians 2 and verse 3. Colossians 2, verse 3. 2 verse 3. Again, we're told this in passing. It says, that you may know the mystery of God, namely Christ, in whom are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. Colossians 2 verse 3. The mystery of God, namely Christ, in whom are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. Yeah. Old Testament, you're given books to read. New Testament, you're given a person. You're given the Son of God, who is your King. He is the one who will, through his death, will provide forgiveness. And he is the one who will give you the insight and the power with which to now live wisely. Glory to him. So if you want to bypass the last 30 odd minutes, just go to Christ. He says, come to Christ and you'll have all the wisdom you ever needed. Glory to him.